Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC Studios, it's Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast. It's Wednesday, May 25th. The U.S. has 120 firearms per 100 residents. In other words, 20% more guns than people in this country. And that's up in recent years from 88 per 100, so a little less than a gun per person, as recently as 2011. So 10 years ago, we did not have more guns per person than people. Now we do. Gun possession is becoming more common in this country, not less, despite all the gun violence. And our rate of gun ownership far surpasses that of any other country around the world. We are truly unique in this respect. Again, by the numbers, the next closest, according to the BBC, is Yemen, a country in a civil war, and they only have 55 guns per 100 residents when we have 120. In the year 2020, the last year that complete data is available for, there were 38,355 deaths by firearms in this country. Now, there are 365 days in a year, 38,000 deaths. The math is pretty easy there. A little more than 100 gun deaths every day in this country. And of those 38,000 gun deaths, around 24,000 were suicides. Most were suicides. We've talked about this before, but a lot of people don't realize this. It's a lot easier to kill yourself with a gun than any other way. Public health people talk about suicides on the rise in this country. Maybe they track the rise in gun ownership in conjunction with that. I don't know, but I wonder how many fewer successful suicide attempts there would be without the unique proliferation of guns here. Around 14,000 of those 38,000 gun deaths were homicides. About 1,300 of the gun deaths, most of the rest were accidents or other incidents. Now, of all the murders in the United States, the vast majority, around 80%, are with a gun. In the UK, just 4% of murders are committed with a gun. That affects the overall homicide rates, too, if guns are so prevalent. In the U.S., around 5 people per 100,000 are murdered. In the U.K., only around 1 per 100,000. So those are some actual numbers on the uniqueness of the United States, on guns. American exceptionalism lives in this area. On the day after another 18-year-old teenager with an apparently legal assault weapon committed yet another mass killing, at last count, 19 children and 2 adults. But there are other things to talk about, too, other patterns that recur and recur in these things that we can discuss, should discuss, must discuss, to potentially find preventive measures. Like, there's a pattern here where the gunman, and it's almost invariably a gunman, not a gunwoman, a pattern where the gunman shoots a woman in his private life before he goes out and does his big public thing. This 18-year-old in Texas, the news reports say, shot his grandmother and then went to the school. Adam Lanza, the Newtown, Connecticut school shooter 10 years ago this year, killed his mother and then went to Sandy Hook Elementary School. Remember the assassination of New York City police officers Ramos and Liu in 2014? The guy who did that shot his girlfriend in Baltimore, then came to New York to find police officers to shoot at random. Why did all these things go like that? And yes, we can talk about the best practices, and we must, for protecting school buildings. And yes, we can talk about the cultural and economic contexts of gun violence, including mass shootings and individual ones. But we want to begin by respecting the victims of yesterday's shooting. The place where this happened is so different than the New York metropolitan area where the show comes from and where most of you are. Uvalde, Texas has a population of only around 15,000 people, according to the 2020 census. The population is around 80% Latino and around 20% white, and that's it. Less than 1% of the population there is Black or Asian American or Native American. It's near San Antonio, near the Mexican border. The New York Times suggests a very stable community with this stat. Listen to this. In the neighborhood around Robb Elementary School where the shooting took place, more than 40% of residents have lived in the same house for at least 30 years, according to the Census Bureau, as cited in the Times. So let's pay some respects to the victims and just get to know some things about this small city that will never be the same. Our first guest today is Sergio Martinez Beltran, politics and government reporter for the Texas Newsroom, a public radio program in Texas, to discuss the Uvalde shooting and the people and the town. Welcome to WNYC, Sergio, and thanks for giving us some time on what must be both a horrible and extremely busy day. Hello from New York.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
And tell us just a little bit more about the Texas Newsroom. I'm not actually sure. Is that a show? Is that a news organization? What's your context?
Great question. It's a collaboration between NPR and public radio stations in Texas, particularly the big radio stations like KRA in Dallas, Texas Public Radio in San Antonio, KUT in Austin, and Houston Public Media. So we're here pretty much elevating the stories of the local stations and also making sure we have a cohesive newsroom.
Great. So thanks for that context. And mostly on this segment, as I said earlier in the intro, we don't want to do politics. We don't want to talk about the shooter. We want to let our listeners up here just know a little bit more about the community where this happened and create a space where our listeners can live with the empathy and sympathy that I know they are feeling for the victims and their loved ones and a community far from our own. So tell us more about Uvalde, Texas. First, can you locate it more precisely on a map for us? Where is it and what's around it?
Yeah, absolutely. So Uvalde, Texas is about 83 miles west of San Antonio. So that's about an hour and 30 minutes if there's no traffic, right? And, you know, it is a small community. It's about 16, 18,000 people. The majority of the residents are Hispanic. It's also a particularly young population. There's a lot of children. And when we talk about this Hispanic families, we're talking about folks who, you know, it's a mix. They've been there for decades. We also have some folks who are newcomers, whose main language is Spanish at times, but it's a tight-knit community. Everyone knows each other. And Brian, it's very touching to see on social media, people paying their respects to their loved ones. And then when you go into the comment sections, a lot of people replying, hey, I knew this person, that teacher actually taught me, or hey, that person was my cousin. So we're seeing that this community is very united and very loving towards each other, which is makes this tragedy even worse in a way.
Yeah. And what's the economy based on there? What do people tend to do for a living?
Yeah, blue collar workers. That's what we're seeing. Again, a lot of these people are immigrants. And, you know, I think that's also an important point here, because we have been hearing from parents, right? And we've seen news reports of parents saying that they left their jobs right away as they learned about the shooting in the school. And you know, many of them, you could see them, they were coming straight from work, from working in the farmlands and in construction. So it's a very hardworking community as well.
Do you know even more specifically who the families with kids at the school are, demographically speaking or economically or anything else? You know, if it's a neighborhood elementary school, then the people there may even be more similar to each other than, you know, than people in the community as a whole.
Right. We know that the school serves students in second, third, and fourth grades. And so right there, there's a lot of similarity with the victims. One of the things that, you know, I have to be honest with you, Brian, I don't feel comfortable necessarily like naming them yet because we still need some confirmation. Sure. But from what we've seen, you know, there is a lot of victims who are Hispanic. We've seen reports that many of the victims received awards hours before the shooting for good grades. These are good kids, you know, good communities. good parents who are working hard, and we're working hard to give their kids a better future. And they, you know, we've seen reports that many of them celebrated with their kids before the shooting, hours before the shooting, and then this tragedy happened. It's I get a little emotional talking about it because it's really hard to fathom that, you know.
Yeah, and I don't know if you're a parent yourself, but as a parent, I know what it's like to bond as a community with other parents from your kid's elementary school class. And I can't even imagine what those families are going through now. And of course, this changes their lives forever. And I don't know if it makes it any easier or harder to be experiencing this as a group with your friends who also lost their kids. I saw a report about horrific procedures for identifying the victims, including that they were taking DNA samples from parents to help with positive IDs. I can't imagine. It makes my heart want to explode as well as my head. Does that mean some of the children weren't recognizable?
I think one could assume that law enforcement agencies have been very short when talking about this tragedy. And, you know, I think they're coming from this position that there's still a lot of information that needs to come out. And also because of the magnitude, again, we're talking about 19 children so far, and we're talking about two adults. At least one of them was a teacher. So there's a lot of people they have to notify to let them know about their loved ones. And, you know, yesterday, as you mentioned, we learned about how some parents had to go in and get a DNA swab so they could help, that could help identify their kids. We also, you know, hours, 12 hours, 13 hours after the shooting, we saw reports of parents outside of the school, outside of the police office, outside of the reunification center, telling reporters, hey, I haven't heard anything about my kid. No one is telling me anything about my kid. And I think a lot of them are really hoping that potentially their kid ran away and it's safe, because we know that if that's not the case, it is a tragedy, that the parents' worst nightmare.
Sharon in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, I am a New Yorker. My daughter is a principal at a school, and my granddaughter goes to the school with her. This morning I prayed with them before they left. If you knew the protocols that administrators have to go through to protect children in a school building, you would be amazed. It is so hard to protect children in a building and not give them the traumatized feeling of being unsafe. My daughter has protocols in place for people that are parents that seem a little bit off, that they have to meet their kids two blocks away. I'm concerned about the long-term effects of the school mates. We have to put something in place for them to have some kind of psychological counseling, because looking at my five-year-old granddaughter this morning, I just could not fathom the loss and the town being such a close-knit community, unlike New York City, that everybody knows each other. So it's affecting everybody, whether it's your child or not.
That's right.
So I'm just saying God bless those people. I'm praying very hard. And as moms, because I'm a mom, when moms get up in the Senate and do something, that's when they're going to do something about this craziness. It's just like Mothers Against Drunk Driving. Mothers Against Drunk Driving is a force to be reckoned with. And we might have to do the same thing with guns. God bless you so much.
And you too, Sharon. Thank you very much for your call. Well, we've had a couple of wonderful calls here, Sergio, from New Yorkers who really just wanted to express their sympathies, which is what we asked for in this segment. There's plenty of time in this show later to do politics, to do cultural analysis, to do all this stuff. We're just spending time with you, getting to know Uvalde, Texas, getting to know some of the people who have had to live or die through this and those who will have to live with it in the future. So not surprisingly, our listeners are showing up with their sympathies and their condolences. Here's one thing that a listener tweets. It's high time to broadcast video and photographs of the crime victims in situ so that Americans can actually see the effects of a massacre of children with high-capacity automatic firearms designed for warfare. So that's one listener's opinion. Sergio, how do you handle that? Now, you, like me, just do radio, so you don't have pictures to decide whether to show or not to show. But how about even how graphic some sound might be in an audio news report after something like this? Have you ever been in a position to have to make that judgment call?
You know, I mean, not necessarily with shootings, but with other incidents. And I think one of the things, certainly folks in my newsroom, my editors, and in other newsrooms that I worked for, we always think about this idea of maximizing the truth, but minimizing the harm. And I worry at times, right, that broadcasting a lot of this sound and videos would keep the truth a status quo, but maximize the harm to the victims, to the families, to the brothers and sisters of these victims, right? So you know, it is a judgment call that we make often. I think that the listener who tweeted has a good point. It also sounds like a lot of the responsibility is like on the media, right, to make sure that we broadcast all this. But I think that the responsibility is also individually, right? Like, there's so much we can broadcast and there's so much we can report about that would move people to do something or compel people to do something, right? With this shooting, with other situations. So I think it's also a lot about personal responsibility. We've also seen that there's people that have had an idea of guns and gun safety before a shooting. And then when it hits them, when it's a family member, then they change course, right? And their idea and their perspective changes. One thing I want to say, Brian, is that as reporters in this country, we cover a lot of shootings. And this is not the first shooting I've covered, mass shooting I've covered. Unfortunately, it certainly won't be the last one. But one of the things that community members in other shootings and in other communities say to reporters often and have certainly said to me is, do not forget about us. Hmm. We go in there. We're doing this show today. We go in there. We talk to the communities for the first 2 weeks, and then we forget about them. Or maybe the next school shooting or the next mass shooting happens, and then that takes over the news cycle, and then we forget about Buffalo and we forget about Uvalde. And I think if there's something your listeners can do, is certainly pray for this community, but also not forget about them, you know, because I think that we are reporting on it right now, but these folks are going to live, their future is different to what their past has been. Now they don't have their kids. Now they don't have their cousins. They don't have their teacher. How does the community move forward, right? And we have to keep that in mind.
Yes. And so the last question I'll ask you, and then I'll let you go back to your real job, and I really appreciate you giving a station so far out of time and our listener community so far out of town, I should say, so much time this morning when you're in the middle of this. But I saw the school superintendent in Uvalde say this ends the school year there. They will not return. So what do those families do now, to the point you were just making? How is the town providing for their mental health or anything else? I'm sure they're even just starting to figure that out. But what do they do if the rest of the school year is canceled?
Right. We don't know. You know, we do know that some local lawmakers have been on Twitter asking mental health providers and experts to come to Uvalde and help the community and help the kids and the parents. The state and the local government is also providing crisis counselors at those reunification centers. But yeah, the school year is over. And one of the things that the superintendent said to you, it's that he's heartbroken. And, you know, yesterday in a press conference, he broke down talking about this. How does the community move forward? That's a huge question that as someone who has not experienced this, I cannot respond. But I think that we're going to be paying attention to it. And I think that, again, we need to remember them, and we need to remember the victims. We need to remember those who stayed, who survived this shooting, and try to provide as much help and assistance as possible so they can continue their lives somehow.
Sergio Martinez Beltran, politics and government reporter for the Texas Newsroom. Thank you so much for your time and thoughtfulness today. We really, really appreciate it.
Of course.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.